Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning. And we head to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Charles Robinson to the program from NFLBlueBook.com. Charles, good morning. How are you?
What's going on, gents? How you doing today?
Awesome, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. There's a lot to get to. But, Charles, I want to start here. We talked about this a few minutes ago. The Pro Bowl is gone. It is no more. I think this is a fabulous day for the NFL. I'm glad they finally had the good sense to recognize this, that nobody wants the Pro Bowl, nobody wants Pro Bowl games. And now, Charles, I think that actually being named a Pro Bowler means something again. What do you make of all this?
Yeah, you know, that's kind of an interesting take, because now when you're named a Pro Bowler, there's not going to be the, you know, the laundry list of alternates. Over the years, obviously, the game diminished in watchability, and then they disassembled it, basically making it into a flag football game and skills competition. And Shedeur Sanders was a Pro Bowler last year. And, you know, you got to the point where, especially, when I started covering the NFL, you know, around 2000, 2001, it was still a really big deal. And it was not uncommon for that to be like a contract escalator if you were voted the Pro Bowl. Like, it wasn't maybe quite on the level of being named an All-Pro, but it was certainly it was coveted by players. And that is not at all what it's turned into over time, obviously. And I think the fact that you're going to name Pro Bowl, you know, a Pro Bowl team, not put it out there, but not have alternates, now restores some actual value to, you know, getting named to it. And it's odd because, you know, I don't know if this is true, but I've seen some other reporters state that this is the first time any major U.S. professional sport has essentially disassembled their own all-star game. I think the NFL saw it became just a negative point in time every single season. You know, we'd go through this conversation about how bad the Pro Bowl was, and that became this annual recurring sort of rite of passage for each season. And the NFL just didn't want to drag that around anymore. And I totally get it. And I will say, I covered one Pro Bowl my entire career, and it was in 2007, and it was when Sean Taylor wiped out Brian Moorman, the Bills punter. And I can't believe, like, I think that's one that might be the most famous play in Pro Bowl history.
Yes.
And that was the one I was there for. So I can tell you, I've never heard a crowd, I think probably maybe at any All-Star game, just explode the way that crowd did when Sean Taylor just absolutely destroyed Brian Moorman on a fake punt.
So it's interesting you've covered one Pro Bowl. I know you've covered more owners' meetings than that, Charles. A much more important thing to cover. Did, like, Bob Kraft and Jed York ever invite you to go get a massage with them?
Come on, man. What are you doing? Yeah, it's allegedly Jed yes. York obviously being arrested. The body cam footage is not out now, out there by the Mahoning Valley task force that put together a prostitution sting. I it was interesting to hear the police. I wonder, in the body cam footage, they're going through Jed York's wallet and they're talking about how much cash he has, and at one point clearly they see an ID, and you can see them, like, one police officer is kind of showing the ID to the other police officer. And I'm like, do they know who, are they recognizing right now who this is? And is this sort of the subtext of the conversation where they're talking about, like, I can't believe, you know, people, I'm paraphrasing here, but people with all this money they can do so many other things, and they do this. And it was, yeah, I mean, it's certainly embarrassing for York. It's embarrassing for the league. And what's really interesting about this, though, is now you have to figure out, like, Robert Kraft, there was no suspension in the Robert Kraft, you know, the massage parlor incident, because ultimately when that ran its course, a judge found that the police had violated the rights of all these other individuals who are going into a massage parlor because they'd set up this, you know, secret camera to tape all these individuals who weren't engaging in prostitution. So that got tossed out. And I think that's why the NFL, ultimately, there was never any punishment for Kraft. Now, on the flip side of that, obviously, we've talked in the past about Jim Irsay being arrested for operating a vehicle while intoxicated, and he got a six-game suspension and a $500,000 fine. So, you know, the NFL is going to have to determine, Roger Goodell is going to have to determine where does this land between those two? Because he's already pled guilty to a misdemeanor. By the way, let's just say this. I've heard people ask what the possession of the criminal tools was. It was a phone. That's what that was. People are like, what did he possess? What's a criminal tool? When you use a phone to engage in crime. When you use a phone to engage in a crime, that's considered a criminal tool. Joe, stop.
Sorry.
Stop.
He's unhinged this morning.
I know. You got to knock it off, man.
I apologize.
I don't think that apology is real at all.
I'm just trying to get out of this without getting caught up in any of Joe's nonsense here.
It's a tough thing to accomplish. Well, we'll see how that all turns out with Jed York there. Charles, the Deshaun Watson situation. So he has the press conference over the weekend. And Walking out of that press conference, like, you know, we were talking about this on the show Monday. I was like, there's no way they could they could name him the starting quarterback. And then I think as we were ending our show, they literally named him the starting quarterback with like 3 minutes left in our show. And I was like, oh, my gosh, what are they doing? You know, he came out since then. He had his long speech the other day about taking responsibility for the words that he said and all those things. First off, I guess a couple of different things. To me, this tells me that they look at Shedeur Sanders and they're like, nope, he's not it. And number two, like, what do you make of like the reception that Watson is going to get if he's still the starting quarterback by the time week three rolls around and they open up their home schedule?
Yeah, you know, it was funny. That was such a shocker. I was with the Panthers, and I was like out on the field with the Panthers, and the Panthers, they play the Browns in week three in Cleveland. And I was with a member of their front office. And I was like, hey, you want to know the quarterback you're going to potentially face in week three? And when I told him it was Watson, he was just like, you got to be kidding me. He's like, serious? I'm like, yeah, they just named him. We should have known when after the Bills preseason game, Deshaun comes out and says what he says. And then Todd Monken, the Browns head coach, gets asked about it. And he immediately says it's not going to factor in the decision. Right then we should have known. Well, we should have been like, okay. If he's like instantaneously saying this isn't going to factor in the decision, then it means – it's going to be Watson, and this has been baked in for a little bit. And all I can tell you guys is, before I answer the latter in terms of what the reception he's going to face, when I went through Browns camp, after Watson was named, I like went back and I started looking through my notes and you know, really looking at what I was told by the organization. I don't know why I didn't walk out of there thinking it's absolutely Watson, because the two things that happened, number one, when I was talking to somebody inside the team about the quarterback decision, and I said something along the lines of, hey, when this is all hashed out, what am I going to be able to say about the starter? This individual went through a laundry list of like, here's what the quarterback has to do with the line of scrimmage. Like, we think it's 70 snaps. Here's what Todd's offense looks like. And there's like a multitude of things. You're not managing an offense. You're literally running it at the line of scrimmage. You can change the play. You have to set line protections. There's just all these different things that you have to align. And listening to that and thinking about Watson, I'm like, okay, they're clearly talking about the veteran here. It's like, who's done this before? Shedeur's never done that. And Deshaun has. Deshaun did that in Houston. And so I should have known, okay, that's the first sign. And then when I talked to Monken later, you know, Monken was just like straight up, he's like, look, I want to win now, and I can't think about down the line. Like, he flat out said, I'm not worried about down the line. Well, Shador's your down the line guy. So those two statements to me, I should have walked out going, okay, it's definitely Watson. In terms of the response, let's see what happens in the first two games. I mean, I think fans are fickle, but they're also bandwagon. You know, they'll jump right back onto a bandwagon if a player comes out and plays well. So if he plays well in the first two games, maybe that changes ultimately how he's viewed, at least amongst a segment of Browns fans. There's also a segment that are Shador fans that no matter what, they're going to boo Watson regardless of how he's playing, just because they want to see Shador.
Yeah, it seems like the fact that he stinks at football is going to be kind of an issue with this whole thing. But man,
they don't. Guys, this goes back. I got killed by Browns fans when I said this when they made the Myles Garrett trade and they brought Verst in. I said that I had spoken to someone in the Browns organization who's part of the decision making process, and the feel was definitely, we're still an off season away from being done. Like, we've stacked two really good draft classes. The roster's turned over. We have the right coach, but we're still an off season away. The implication of that statement was, we're not set at quarterback. Like, we have to resolve the quarterback spot. We have two first round picks in the 2027 draft. It's going to be super rich at quarterback. And that's the option we have on the table. So we have to go through 2026, make sure we don't have the guy on the roster as it is, and then 2027 is when we set that piece into place, and we should be done building.
Right, but Todd Monken is, I got to win now. Like, it makes no sense. I mean,
He's getting his job. You know, I said to him at one point, I'm like, you know, you remind me of Bruce Arians. Like, in terms of how you carry yourself, you're very blunt. You're straight to the point. You don't broker a lot of BS. And that's how Arians was. And I think the parallel there is two guys who got their head coaching job late in their life. Like, you know, guys don't typically get your first head coaching job at 60, and you just don't have time to screw around. And Monken said that. Like, this is all stuff that I've saved because I'm going to use it later. But Monken flat out was like, yeah, I don't have time for that. Like, I don't have, like, he, at one point he laughed and he goes, this is probably my last job. Like, he's like, I know where I'm at. You know, I'm not going to be getting other head coaching jobs after this. This is going to be it for me. So it's very important that I make the most of it.
Well, just really quick, that's great. And now everyone in the world who pays attention to sports thinks he's a freaking moron because he chose Deshaun Watson. Like, he thinks he's going to win this year with Deshaun Watson. I mean, play the kid, get your quarterback next year. You're going to get another year. It's asinine. It's asinine.
I get that. I understand that. And I said prior to the decision, it makes more sense to me that you would lean into Shador because he fits the youth of your team, right? He fits, like, you're get a look at the guy who has the room to grow, and that makes more sense in terms of the surrounding makeup of the team. But the one factor that I think is important here is, if Monken does not feel like Shador can go to the line and do the 15 things he needs him to do pre-snap, which involves motions, all kinds of other things, that means you're going to cut down the offense to something that's workable. And then that now affects who? It affects Harold Fannin. It affects Denzel Boston. It affects Casey Concepcion. It affects Quinshon Judkins. You have a lot of other young players you have to develop in that offense. And Munkin's approaching this from the standpoint of, hey, I got to worry about those guys too. And I can't all of a sudden look at those guys and go, hey, I know you guys are way ahead of the curve. You guys can completely handle it. But the offense we have to run it at 40% because we got a young guy who's not used to running a full suite of options. So we're now cutting down this whole offense, which now is going to limit your growth because we're deciding we're going to go with the quarterback who can't do what I need him to do right now.
Robbie, I'm sorry. I keep – this will be my last thing that I say on this. No, sorry. By the way, I just want to say, awesome pick on Dylan Gabriel, by the way. What was he, a third rounder? Apparently, he can't tie his shoes now. Great job, Cleveland.
You know what, man? I'm sure this is all going to get clipped for Cleveland.
I hope so.
They clip this show and put it on Cleveland Airways. It is what it is, man. It doesn't – you can sit here and complain about all the past stuff all you want. The fact is they actually have some really good young talent on that team. If they end up selecting the quarterback in the 2027 draft, it's going to be a player that walks into, I think, a pretty good situation. And not only that, they're going to have a head coach who says to the quarterback, I'm going to give you a lot of freedom to run this thing. So, you know, that's where they are, and they're set up for it, and they've got, you know, two first-round picks. And that became the conversation when I was in Carolina when we were talking about Watson having been named the quarterback. The fact that they have two first-round picks, I was talking to this front office person in Carolina. I said, is the 2027 draft going to live up to this with the quarterbacks? And they're working ahead on that draft right now. And he said, absolutely. He said, right now, minimum five first-round quarterbacks in 2027. And he said, and there are a couple star, like centerpiece star guys in this class.
So, Charles, Michael Penix back at practice down there in Atlanta for the Falcons. He's not going to play in the preseason finale. But back in the fold there, Tua obviously has had a head start with the offseason program and in camp here. And yet he hasn't been named the starter yet. We'll see what happens by the time week one rolls around here. But Penix now back at least healthy and ready to go once the regular season's come around. What does that tell you about Tua and where things currently stand with him?
Yeah, it's weird to be – honestly, we're kind of starting the quarterback competition now. Like, we're almost out of August, and we're beginning the quarterback competition in Atlanta, and that definitely was not the way it was supposed to go. You know, they really thought that Tua would be able to grasp Stefanski's offense quickly and hit the ground running, and he would be the clear starter – at the midway point of camp, and then it has not happened because he's performed so poorly in his opportunities, and it's been about as rough as I think they could have expected a veteran quarterback to walk in and fare, particularly a guy who at one point got a massive contract in Miami, was considered, you know, a franchise player. He has not lived up to that, and now Penix comes back in, and there's, I don't know that he necessarily has time to be ready for the season opener. Even though he's full go in practice, there's going to be some time where he has to just adjust to it, the speed. You don't want to put him out there and get him injured. So I think I'd be surprised if Tua doesn't at least get the initial start when the season kicks off. But I will say this, the exhibition game tomorrow against Miami, like Tua, I think he's right now, this period between now and whenever he potentially gets benched, which I think is on the table, this is the period that will probably decide whether or not he's ever an NFL starting quarterback again. I just don't know that if it does not work here and it does not work with the Stefanski offense and you lose out to Michael Penix, who you effectively were brought in to, replace because of the injuries. And Penix didn't even hit the field, and you still lose your job to him, ultimately. I don't know that anyone's ever going to view Tua as a starting quarterback ever again. So very, very important juncture the next, I would say, not only tomorrow in that exhibition game, but, you know, leading into the regular season if he does get the week one start.
So, Charles, we talked recently about the idea of the NFL potentially, you know, getting involved in this whole thing with dudes, you know, being like, you know what, I think I'm going to go back to college and make more money there. They did do something. It wasn't the extreme measure we talked about, but they have helped here with what they did yesterday. Have you heard from people around the league that this is actually something now that they're like, okay, this is dumb and this needs to stop?
Yeah, I will say that, the handful of individuals and I talked to a couple of GMs about it since Daquan Wright left the Browns and went to, exited to go back to LSU, and they were pissed. I mean, I don't know any other way to put it. Like, they were just like this, like, I mean, it was the, they think it's a joke. They think it's like they're like straight up one GM. I was tiptoeing around. I'm like, you know, I don't know. Maybe this seems like an internship where a guy comes and goes through your camp and then goes back to college. And hey, if he goes back into the draft, maybe you know him a little bit better because he's been under your roof. And he stopped, he interrupted me. He goes, no, this is stupid. He just looked straight up, like, this is stupid. He's like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. And he was so mad. He goes, we will not do any more work on Wright. He's like, we won't do any more. He said, our final work on him heading into the 2025 draft is what our final work would be on him going forward. We won't waste any time doing additional work on him. I'm like, man, like he was like upset. And I think it was because of the fact that in his mind, and he brought up the combine. He was like, that guy was at the combine. He's like, he took a spot from somebody. And now he's like, you know, it wasn't not the Browns GM, but he's like, he took a spot in that camp from someone else. And he said, and it's hard. He started talking about how hard it is to fill out a 90-man roster. And he said to me at one point, he goes, we just brought in a player. He's like, this is how hard it is to fill out a 90-man roster in camp. We just brought in a player I've never even heard of. He's like, we literally signed a player I've never heard of in my life. And that's how hard it is to keep bodies in your camp. And he's like, and then this guy, he feels like is just wasting time in Cleveland and coaching resources. So I do think that after talking to a couple of people, and these are influential people in personnel departments, and I think other people in the league, when they go to meetings, would listen to these individuals, it's clear. They're like, no, we can't open this avenue, and there has to be some punitive measure. And one of these GMs said to me, Joe, and this is basically what you said, Joe, he said, I don't think they should be allowed back in the league again. If they leave and go back to college, they should not have a path back into the NFL again. And he's like, you know, from a legal standpoint, that's probably not doable. But he's like, I just think there should be some rule in place that if you, you enter a draft, you cannot have another path back into the league once you exit the NFL and go back to college.
All right, Charles, last thing for you here. You know, the Titans wrap up their preseason this weekend against Chicago, and then the highly anticipated matchup between the Jets and the Titans to kick off week one of the regular season. I mean, you look around the league. I mean, why would you want to watch Green Bay, Minnesota, or Denver, Kansas City when you could watch the Jets and the Titans? But in all seriousness, like, whoever loses that game, it's going to be absolute nuclear meltdown for the fan base. So my question to you is simple. Week one, who's the game more important for, the Jets or the Titans?
Oh, I think the Titans for sure. I went through Jets camp. The Jets don't have their long-term quarterback. In all due respect to like the Cade Klubnik excitement that was there when I went through, people really thought Cade Klubnik was pretty good. I think they know they don't have their long-term. Geno's not going to be their long-term starter. Cade's not going to be their long-term starter. So without that player being on the roster, I don't think there's this sense of like, hey, everything's in place now. Now we need to start taking these big, you know, these quantum leaps forward. I think it's different for the Titans. You have Cam Ward. You now have an offensive coordinator in place that is supposed to be helping him turn a corner. You know, you've made all these changes defensively. There has to be some signs of positive growth here. And unfortunately, I think we've gone through camp. The Titans have gone through camp, and there's still the persistent questions about, you know, Cam's consistency. Can he keep the ball out of harm's way? Can he just grow at a rate where it's not going to be a constant question about, you know, what's right, what's wrong? Is the offense right for him? Why can't he take the step we need? Does he have the coaching around him that he needs? Does he have the players around him that he needs? Is he limiting other young players? That to me is what's waiting on the other side of a loss. You lose to the Jets, and especially if Cam Ward does not play well, I think immediately that's going to be the questions. In your mind, don't you believe that's what if you've taken a quarterback number one overall and you're now having that conversation again, and you've changed the coaching around, you've added to the talent around him, that to me is not a disaster yet, but you're certainly taking steps in that direction.
Oh, yeah,
not great.
I would totally
agree. Totally agree on that front. Charles?
Don't you think we would have felt – that's I thought at this point, if you'd asked me at the beginning of camp to now, I'd have told you, I think the Titans, you know, this should be a good camp for them. Like, this should be sort of a, okay, we're in a bit of a quagmire. Now we've got some really high-end coaching. We've added a great player at wide receiver. We've got a young quarterback who now is starting to show, now that he's got the coaching and they're approaching the expectations right, which you're like, hey, let's rein it in a little bit and take what you're given. And I would have thought we would feel better going into the season opener. This is certainly a surprise to me that we're at this point.
Charles, great stuff, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us today, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, sounds good, guys.
Yes, sir. Charles Robinson from NFL Blue Book, our guest here on the program. We'll react to what Charles had to say. Take more of your thoughts at 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Today, the Nashville Sounds take on Jacksonville. First pitch at 6:05. You can catch all the action on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks, Family Leisure, and Social Cantina. Keep up with training camp at 1025 The Game for the latest updates, player interviews, and more as you get prepped for the upcoming football season. Coverage of training camp presented by Twin Peaks Restaurants, Parma Tractor and Equipment, Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery, and Tri-State Water, Power, and Air. Appreciate Charles Robinson for being with us in the last segment. Joe, it does not sound like NFL GMs have reacted very kindly to the college football players or the NFL players defecting to go back to college football. So good to see NFL, both personnel people and ultimately decision makers, feeling pretty strongly about this. I wasn't convinced they would.
Yeah, and you think about it, and it does make sense, right? I mean, it's like this is hard. You got to be all in. If you're going to have guys who are like, yeah, I mean, I'll go to camp, but, you know, probably be better if I could play college this year. I get why people in the NFL are like, well, screw you, man. Like, so again, I said earlier in the show, I don't begrudge. I mean, if we were in that position, again, if whatever the job may be, if any of us were in a position of, okay, over here you can make this much, over here you can make 10 times as much, what would any human do? They'd probably pick the one where you can make a lot more money, right? So, like, I understand it. But also, yeah, I get why these NFL guys hate this. And again, this is specific to the class of 2022 who got cut out of the 5-for-5 thing. You know, the COVID year guys got the extra time. Now everybody moving forward gets 5 years. These guys got a year lopped off. Someone, they had to draw the line somewhere. The NCAA knew there were going to be lawsuits. I don't think this is going to be an annual thing that we talk about with guys leaving the NFL and going to college, but it's good to see this reaction because you don't know. Like, you could look at anything and say, well, is that Pandora's box, right? Like, is this just going to become a thing? I think now we are in the process this week of killing that mindset altogether, which is great to see.
It is great to see. Charles, very quick to say, Joe, that the Titans more at stake in week one in their battle against the New York Jets. I think the national perspective would probably disagree with that just from the standpoint of, number one, it's the Jets. Number two, Aaron Glenn kind of feels like he's on the hot seat and they suck. But what do you make of that? I'm totally with him. Like, I think, you know, having the quarterback in place, I would give the edge to the Titans there. Going to be a nuclear reaction either way, depending on who loses the game. But Charles, very quick to go Titans on that answer.
Yeah, and also pointing out, we're trying to play, I mean, we played earlier this Kurt Benkert guy who is out there like, all of you ripping Cam, you're wrong, here's why, broke down film. I thought it was interesting. Also, he's like, and by the way, if you put in the QR code, I'll sell you a Cam rookie card. I'm like, oh, are you breaking down film or is this freaking QVC? But he had some interesting points on the film. But Charles expressing what I think the majority opinion is, which is so far this preseason has not been exciting on the Cam front. People are a little concerned. It's fair to be concerned. And so then if you bring that into the season, lose to the Jets, yeah, the meltdown overall will be massive, but also it's hard. I guess it's hard for me to see them losing to the Jets and him playing well. So then the Cam conversation also just explodes.
So let me ask you this, Joe. It felt like, obviously we were not there for either one of these. In San Francisco, the reporting would suggest that the Niners won the joint practice, right? They won the joint practice. The reporting would suggest last week that the Titans won the joint practice against Seattle. So I'll ask you this. We've seen the preseason games. The starters have struggled to this point. We'll see what happens in the actual preseason game itself coming up on Saturday. But if the Titans, quote-unquote, win the joint practice today against Chicago, what will that tell you? What will that tell you if they've won two of the three joint practices against pretty good teams in the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, it's not nothing. To me, it's like, so what aspect, quote-unquote, won? Right. What are the concerns? Like you'd like to, if the secondary going against the Bears passing personnel doesn't get completely carved up, that's good. Like, I mean, to me, that's okay. That means maybe there's some progress, some improvement, some better communication, whatever it is, is the pass protection good for Cam Ward? And obviously, Cam's the first thing. It's the top of the list always. Does that offense do anything? I mean, yeah, it's not nothing. But to me, and then we'll see the preseason game. And if it's like the same as last week, where it's like they played really well against the Seahawks in the practice, but then the Seahawks backups kicked their butt in the preseason game, it's still going to be like, oh God. Right. And I don't know what the Bears are going to do, I don't know what Ben Johnson's going to do, and maybe he said that and I missed it, like what he's going to do with the starters. But I mean, it's not nothing, but also all of it. Thankfully, we're almost done with this crap, so we can just not care about any of it, and I'm excited about that.
Hey, you think Saleh maybe doesn't like Ben Johnson all that much? I mean, Ben Johnson, Matt LaFleur, not exactly the best of buds,
Yeah, maybe.
Saleh and Matt LaFleur are the best of buds. I wonder if there's some lingering hostility there.
That's a good question. I mean, I wonder if Saleh's going to show up at the studio someday and throw you around because you like to rip Matt LaFleur so much, I mean, there's...
Well, we know LaFleur's not going to do it, so that'd be fine.
He's going to have to... I mean, LaFleur needs somebody to be his bodyguard. It's like the movie My Bodyguard. Underrated early 80s or late 70s probably flick.
I bet there's a little bit of hostility there. I bet Matt LaFleur behind closed doors looks at Robert Saleh and says, I really hate that Ben Johnson guy. I bet Saleh doesn't like him.
I bet you're right. So who would Saleh's beat up list? You've got
Liam Cohen at the top.
Yeah, you got Liam. You got you.
Yep.
Ripping LaFleur, and you've got Ben Johnson. So I'd like to know how he ranks that. Yeah. We've talked before. Saleh was the Titans coach. We talked previously about coach death matches. You're probably talking about the big row, Mike Vrabel. Dan Campbell and Saleh, right? Like it's two of those. Like those are the three that could probably beat the crap out of everybody else in the league, right?
Probably so. I mean,
although big row might be getting a little soft.
Well, maybe so. I mean, thing is, Aaron Glenn, I think looks like he's in good shape. He's only 5'9" though, so.
Yeah, he's a cornerback. Yeah. Great corner. Great play. Yeah, but I'm not. Nah. I mean, when Tomlin was in the league, that was a guy that I you probably put him high on
D'Amico
that list.
D'Amico Ryan's be high on the list.
That's true. Yep, D'Amico's. Yep, he's a young guy, still pretty ripped. So he'd be. So that'd be your final four, probably, right?
Probably
D'Amico,
so.
Campbell.
I mean, LaFleur's out immediately.
Saleh, the big row.
It's a good thing that Mike McDaniel's not a head coach anymore because he was out before the competition began.
Yeah, most of these guys. Are just,
I mean, Harbaugh.
We could beat it. We could beat up most of these guys.
Jim Harbaugh. I mean, I feel like he secretly knows Taekwondo or something. He may be sneaky.
Well, he probably, being the habitual cheater, he probably has brass knuckles hidden, and he's probably drugging his opponents or something like that. So,
if I'm at the top of Saleh's list, you're going to be moving quickly to the top of Harbaugh's list.
Well, I'm sorry that he's a cheater. Speaking of Harbaugh, did you see the other Harbaugh? Did you see the comment he had about Scataboo?
No.
So, see, this is where Twitter can sometimes be good. So,
that once a day. He's like, this is where Twitter can be good.
I'm telling you, man. There's some fun stuff in here.
If you're lucky.
So Scadaboo apparently, like, I don't know, he's been ticking people off because he's been hitting people when you're not supposed to in practice.
Yeah.
We got into a fight yesterday. So someone asked Harbaugh about Scadaboo's, quote, infectious energy, right? So here's the quote. Quote, Scat's great. He does bring a lot of energy, but he did get a 15-yard penalty at the end of practice. Did you notice that? That's not infectious. Well, it is infectious, actually. Infectious in a bad way, right? Like infectious disease type of thing. End quote.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to last very long.
He just called Cam Scadaboo the diarrhea virus. I mean, like, that's.
Let's head to our phone line. Welcome in Nate to the program. Nate, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
What's up, guys? My question is, do we think that the new NFL, not necessarily new, but the news that came out yesterday about players going back to college if they've participated in any NFL activities, not being able to go back into the NFL draft, do you think that changes the mindset at all of college athletes going into or thinking about going into the draft?
Thanks for calling, Nate. Yeah, I think it will. I think that combined with, you know, the other steps that are being taken, it's also like, okay, well, now where am I going? I can't go play in the Big Ten. I can't go play in the SEC. Like I think it's been a very productive week on the kind of nipping this thing in the bud, Joe.
Yes, in the bud, not the butt. Yep. Yes. Because it'll be interesting. Again, let's see. Maybe judges will still look at what the leagues are doing as, some kind of an antitrust violation, but it seems like it's going to be like, so you can either go to some of these other leagues that can't pay you as much, and now it's like, well, was it even worth it to do that? Or just stop. And again, this is the 2022 class, so I do think that all of this combined is going to kill this.
We'll have one more segment coming up next. We've got a very important thing that we need to accomplish coming up next, and we're going to do that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Final segment of the day, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Joe, we've talked a lot about LSU today. We have not mentioned Louisiana's governor, Jeff Landry, in the statement that he put out there about this whole mess that's gone on in college sports this week. Joe, would you like to read the statement from Louisiana Governor Jeff Landry?
Yeah, well, shout out to Amanda Kristovich. Does a great job of covering college sports for front office sports, and she is the one who got this. She asked the office for a statement, and he gave it. And this is an actual statement from the governor of Louisiana. Quote, oh, this whole thing is ridiculous. Don't hate the player, hate the game. I've been saying for a year college sports needs to be fixed. The NCAA could have done it. Congress could have done it. Neither did. Now the SEC is creating a legal mess over athletes that's told were out of eligibility, only to change the rules afterward. The SEC accepted the court's decisions on Diego Pavi and Trinidad Chambliss. Why is this different? You can't tell athletes their college careers are over, watch them move on, change the rules later, and then punish them for not predicting the future. End quote. He actually said, I know that I did my goofy, stupid voice, but he actually said in his quote, don't hate the player, hate the game. Do we need to remove Louisiana from, like, the United States of America? This is the governor of Louisiana. Holy crap.
I remember hearing him talk at one point. Can we add him to the list of the Foghorn, Leghorn, Brian Kelly, Ed Orgeron, Jeff Landry voice?
Yes, it can be partially his child, too. Yes. Okay. Right.
Trinidad Chambliss.
Well, I mean, first of all, it's like, so you, as a governor, you have communications people, you have professionals in your office.
Sure.
They approve this quote from you? Like, you're asking why this is different? There are many reasons this is different from those rulings. Also, you're saying, you can't punish them for not predicting the future. So you're saying that people can never institute new rules? I mean, it's so dumb up and down the list. But the fact that the second sentence was, don't hate the player, hate the game. Like, he's wearing a T-shirt, like a Nike shirt from 1993. I mean, I can't even, I don't even know what to do with this stuff anymore, man.
It must be bad, LSU, obviously, they've been a great program for most of my life. Saban came there and, and it was the Mad Hatter eating grass on the sideline, and it's been good stuff going on. Maybe the greatest college football team ever in 2019. I mean, it's a lot of good stuff. They must be struggling down there because, look, they've always, you know, wanted to win and do whatever it takes to win. But I feel like this is like the last year has been like a bending time and space to try to get back and win college football games again. It must just have been bad down there. That Brian Kelly experience has really rocked this program and really the state.
I mean, and also, by the way, I'm glad you brought up Brian Kelly, because if you remember, Jeff Landry was like, "We will never have a contract like this again at LSU." Yeah. "Oh, hi, Lane Kiffin. Here, you can have all the money you want, the biggest buyout ever, and you can date anyone's wife you'd like in this entire state, young man." I mean, it's like, what? It's just, these people are just, also, like, I should not be on a radio show. I'm sorry. I apologize. Boy. I apologize to everybody.
Somebody asked, "Why is Yosemite Sam on the radio?" Somebody asked if it's Foghorn Leghorn. That's how you know the voice is good. You know, it's all encompassing.
"Lane, if you come be our coach, you will have a percentage of everyone's 401k in the entire state of Louisiana, and all the crawfish etouffee you would ever want. Please end the show. I need to stop."
It's been a nice, almost 6-year run on Robbie and Rex Road. Could be the last day. Really could be it.
People are just insane.
Now, who's responsible for this unwarranted attack on my person?
I mean, I can see it. We'll be live from T-Line tomorrow. Next Man Up with Jake Lyman coming up next. Hopefully we'll see you then. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.